Tonight, inshallah, we continue with Al-Andalus, the forgotten history. And last time, we talked about Ahd al-Wula, the era of governors. And we divided that into two periods. We said period of prosperity was the first one for 20 plus years, and a period of sorrow. And we talked about some of the great individuals in each or in the first era. We talked about Sahm ibn Malik. We spoke about Anbasa ibn Suhaim. And we talked about Abd al-Rahman al-Ghafiqi, rahimahumullah ajma'in. And then in the second period, we spoke about some of the governors who were one of the main reasons for the destruction of that era. And we finished, and the one who was in charge in Andalus was Yusuf ibn Abd al-Rahman al-Fihri. We said this era lasted 42 years, from 30 or 96 Hijri until the year 138. You want to know the Miladi? We said just add about 600 years to that. So, Yusuf ibn Abd al-Rahman al-Fihri, this man, as we said, wasn't ala al-Jadda and wasn't ruling according to the deen of Allah, was racist, was discriminating against al-Barbar and other races in Al-Andalus. And there were many revolutions in Al-Andalus at that period. There were many riots. There was too much division. And each group of people, Yamaniyin, have their own region. Al-Barbar have their own region. The indigenous people of Al-Andalus had their own region. The Arabs, even the Arabs divided. You have Al-Fihriyin, you have Al-Hijaziyin, you have Al-Umawiyin, and you have all these divided groups in Al-Andalus to a point where it became very vulnerable and very weak to defend itself. And we said that the Muslims toward the end lost many places in France, and they lost many places in Spain or in Al-Andalus itself. So, when it seemed that it will be over for Muslims in Al-Andalus, Allah Azza wa Jal had different plans. And we said this era, the era of the governors or Ahd al-Wula, was or ran from 96 to 138. And at the same time, around 132 Hijri, the year 132 Hijri, Dawla al-Umawiyya collapsed. The Umawi dynasty collapsed. And Abbasiyin, the Abbasi dynasty, took over. And if you look in the history, the Abbasiyin in the beginning were very corrupt, very savage. Yani they killed every Amawi came their way. Toward years later in their Khilafah or in their dynasty when they started coming back to the deen. But in the beginning they were savage. They killed thousands of Muslims, especially in Dimashq or Damascus. And they went in the Masjid al-Umawi, on their horses. So, that happened in the year 132. And as we said, at that moment, with al-Fihriyin ruling al-Andalus, they separated themselves from Dawla al-Umawi. And as a consequence, they were separated from al-Abbasi, because they decided that to call themselves Imara. Well, Imara indicates that it's independent. It's not following any central government. So it was a different or independent state. The Abbasiyun, as I said, were killing every person who had the potential to come after seeking the rulings of al-Umawiyyin. So they will come to the lineage of al-Khulafa al-Umawiyyin, the leaders of al-Dawla al-Umawi, and kill them. Your grandkid, he might grow up to rule or to seek his father's and his forefather's kingdom. Let's kill him. But they did not kill the children, and they did not kill the women. They only killed the youngsters or the adults. So whoever, as I said, was qualified to lead from al-Umawiyyin, they will finish him. Some of those who were saved were the grandkids of Hisham ibn Abd al-Malik. And we said al-Walid ibn Abd al-Malik was the Khalifa when Musa ibn Nusayr and Tariq ibn Ziyad conquered the Andalus. And you remember, after 4 years and after a few months of surrounding Sakhra or the Belay, he called them. And then when they got there, a few days later, he died, and his brother Hisham bin Abd al-Malik became the Khalifa. This Hisham bin Abd al-Malik died. But he had three grandkids. He had a few grandkids. Two of those were in Baghdad. Were in Baghdad, in Iraq. One of them, with the name of Abd al-Rahman ibn Muawiyah, and the other, his brother, Walid bin Muawiyah. Okay? Abd al-Rahman ibn Muawiyah and al-Walid ibn Muawiyah. Had Abd al-Rahman was 19. And al-Walid was 13. That's in Baghdad. And as we know that al-Abbasiyun took Baghdad as their capital later on. So one had Abd al-Rahman had problems with his eyes. So he used to stay in the dark. So one day, his son, 4 years old, that shows you they used to get married at the early age. He's 19 and his son is 4 years old. He comes and he's crying. He comes into his father's room and cries. His father tries, Abd al-Rahman bin Muawiyah, try to calm him down. He's not. So he goes, he walks to the door of the house, he opens. He sees the black flags of al-Abbasiyin in the streets. The black flags of al-Abbasiyin. Rayat al-Sawda. فأوقن أو أيقن أنه هالك. He knew that they're coming after. So he grabbed his son, his brother, Walid, who was 13, Abd al-Rahman 19, and they ran away. And he left the women and the children, and as you know, and as I said, al-Abbasiyin would not kill the women and the children. But had he stayed, he would have gotten killed. So he took his brother and ran. When he got to the Euphrates, Furat, he found the armies of al-Abbasiyin, the soldiers, on there, ready to intersect anyone. So he managed to get and throw himself in the river with his brother, and he started swimming, or they started swimming, to go to the other side. So al-Abbasiyun, the soldiers, saw him. So they told them, come back, and we will give you protection. At that moment, al-Walid was tired, 13 years old, the younger. He wanted to come back. Abd al-Rahman told him, don't go back. These people have no worry. But he insisted, so he went back. Once he got to them, they killed him in front of his brother. So Abd al-Rahman ibn Muawiyah got to the other side of the river, and he went through al-Hijaz, today Saudi Arabia, he went through there to Egypt, from Egypt to Libya, from Libya to Al-Qayraman. Why he went to Al-Qayraman? He's Umawi. Umawiyin, Qurayshiyin, from Quraysh. He went to Al-Qayraman because his mother was from Al-Barbar. Allah Azza wa Jal, in arada shay'an hayya asbaba. If Allah wants something, huh, He will pave the road for it. يعني what's the point if someone think, huh? طيب years back, 19 years ago, if we assume he was born the same year his father got married to his mother, people said, why a Qurashi, huh, would marry a Barbariya? But شوف Allah عز وجل, how he plans. So he goes to Al-Qayraman عند أخواله, to his uncles, maternal uncles. And he stays with them. At that time, there was also in the North Africa a fitna. That fitna led by a man named Abd al-Rahman ibn Habib. هذا عبد الرحمن بن حبيب was خوارج خارجي. والخوارج were in a war with the أمويين. So now in the East, العباسيين want to kill this عبد الرحمن. And in the West, in Africa, North Africa, الخوارج want to kill عبد الرحمن. So had he stayed in القيروان in Tunis, he would have gotten killed. So he left, and he went to Barqa in Libya. He went to Barqa in Libya. And he stayed there for a few years. He spent there 4 years. So now how old is he? 23. He sat with himself and he said, what are you going to do for the rest of my life? Gonna wait for someone to come and kill me, assassinate me? Or I gonna just hide and keep, running as a fugitive or living as a fugitive, running away from everyone? If I go to the East, they'll kill me. If I stay here, they might kill me. So he started thinking. And he found that Al-Andalus could be the best place where he can go to protect himself. However, people differ in their ambitions. And people have different standards of goals. Some people, someone like him most probably, a lot of people, who were, if they were in his position, they would have said, خلاص, now we hide, and we stay hiding until we die. Get married, have kids, خلاص. Some people cannot live like that. Some people cannot live, as they call them, inert. There are some chemicals or some elements, they call them inert. They do not react with anything. You have to push them to react. You have to create some kind of environment to it. Most people like that. Lazy. Most people, he gets stuck with a routine, he doesn't want to break out of it. He wants to continue until he dies like that. Don't mess with it. And such people do not make history. Those people live. Maybe they live for 1,000 years or 2,000 years, doesn't matter. And they die and no one knows who they were. And a lot of the times, they are burden in this world. They're burden on other people. They make prices more expensive. They make rents more higher. They make streets crowded. كما قال الرافعي رحمه الله, إن لم تزد في الدنيا فأنت زيادة عليها. If you cannot add to the world, you're an extra addition on the world, a burden on this world. So the believer, the one who is connected with Allah Azza wa Jal, always strive to do better. Always strive to leave a legend, a legacy, I mean. Always strive to leave something behind him. فارفع لنفسك في البرية ذكرها فالذكر للإنسان عمر ثاني فالذكر للإنسان عمر ثاني. You could live for 60 or 70 years, but leave behind you a legacy that will live for another 1,000 or 2,000 years. You come on the day of judgment and your age, huh? Really is 2,070 years. But you actually lived only for 70 years. فمثلا, you don't find a place, huh? A masjid or a house, or I should say just a masjid or a library in the Muslim world without al-Bukhari, Sahih al-Bukhari. And how many people and how many imams and how many scholars, huh? Quote a hadith from Sahih al-Bukhari. And they said, Rawa al-Bukhari, rahimahullah. How many times, huh? Now we forget our parents die, and khalas. When we remember them, we say, rahimahullah. May Allah have mercy on him. But how many people, huh? Make that to al-Bukhari, for example. How many people say, Imam al-Bukhari, rahimahullah, every day? How many people say, Imam Muslim, rahimahullah? How many people say Imam Ahmed, Abu Hanifa, Imam Abu Hanifa, Imam Malik? This is the legacy, huh, that the person needs to leave behind. And every Muslim should see and evaluate himself and see where he can excel. And it's a big mistake to think that you can excel in something that, huh, you're not fit for. You are not created for. So very important to evaluate yourself and know where you are best. So Abd al-Rahman ibn Muawiyah, rahimahullah, after 4 years of in Barqa, 23 years of age, he started thinking and he decided to revive Khilafah al-Umawi. Look at this dream. He's a fugitive and he's thinking of establishing an empire. And maybe some people around him, and I don't doubt it at that time, huh? They said, this guy's crazy. Exactly, huh? He has Sunnah in Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam in Medina with the Sahaba on the day of Al-Khandaq, huh? And they're surrounded by 10,000 disbelievers, armies who are coming just to completely eliminate them. And they're building the trench and a big rock they cannot break. They call him sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And he hit it, a big light shows up, huh? He hit it with his axe. And he tells them, I saw that, huh? The palaces of Yemen opening, conquered. I saw that palaces of Kisra, Caesar, huh? Of the Persians, of the Romans. The person of them was afraid even to go to the bathroom at that moment. And here he's giving them the news that they're gonna conquer the world, This is what you learn from the seerah of Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. You never give up. It's in the hardest of times where a lot of people become very creative and decide what they're gonna do in their life. So he decided, "El Andalus, and I'm gonna go and rebuild the Khilafah, Khilafah al-Umawiyyah or al-Dawla al-Umawiyyah in El Andalus." And one of the reasons he chose El Andalus because it was very unstable. Okay? It was very unstable. So if he can go there and stabilize it, he will be able to attract the people around him. So how he started putting a plan? First, in 136 Hijri, we said, remember, that Al-Abbasiyin attacked Al-Umawiyin in 132, that's when it collapsed, huh? And that's when he ran away. So in 136 Hijri, he had a servant named Badr. He sent him to Al-Andalus. Okay? He sent him to Al-Andalus to study the situation. Explore. To explore everything. What's going on? What's happening? How we can get in and out and all that. He communicated with all the Umayyin who ran away. Their Umayyin ran away from Al-Abbasiyin in Egypt. Their Umayyin, huh, in North Africa. Their Umayyin in Yemen, everywhere. So he started communicating with them, huh, so he can share with them his idea and his plan and what he was planning to do. And he also communicated with the Umayyin in Al-Andalus, because the Umayyin in Al-Andalus were also oppressed, discriminated by Al-Fihri. As we said, Yusuf bin Abd al-Rahman. Yusuf bin Abd al-Rahman هذا, he was in charge of Al-Andalus, huh? He also was discriminating against the Barber. So Abd al-Rahman ibn Muawiyah, huh? Had his communication with the Barber, huh? In Al-Andalus, especially, huh? That they're his uncles, okay? So he had communication with them and he built good rapport with them. And he asked them to help him to get rid of Yusuf. So now he got many supporters from all over, and they were ready to give him support. He decided at that point, huh, his servant Badr, after he communicated with all these people in Al-Andalus and they gave him the allegiance, he decided to enter Al-Andalus by himself. He decided to enter Al-Andalus by himself. One, he doesn't want to create any scenes. So he enters Al-Andalus. Badr, هذا, sends him a man. His name was Ghalib al-Tamimi. Badr sent from Al-Andalus a man to Abd al-Rahman with the name of Ghalib al-Tamimi. And he told him, it's okay to come, it's safe now to come. فَلَمَّا سَمِعْ اسْمُهُ استبشر. Ghalib al-Tamimi. قَالَ غَلَبْنَا وَتَمَّ أَمْرُنَا. Ghalib means victorious. والتميمي, huh? يعني you can break it down to completion, root, huh? Break it down to the verb, huh? To complete. So when he heard his name, as if يعني good omen, he said, we will be victorious and our affair will be completed, our mission. Huh? And the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم كان يعني يعجبه الفعل الحسن. يعني something he will feel something good happens and they were planning to do something, he will feel good about it. يعني يوم الحديبية, huh, when the kuffar of Quraysh were sending their negotiator to the Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم, they sent at the end سهيل بن عمر. فلما رآه النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم قال سهل عليكم أمركم. استبشر باسمي. سهيل بن عمر, سهيل is the diminutive of سهل. سهل means easy. So when he saw him صلى الله عليه وسلم, he tells the Sahaba, inshallah your affair will be easy. And actually this Suhail bin Amr radiallahu anhu became Muslim later. He was maybe the third or the fourth man that Quraysh sent, and they could not come to an agreement. With Suhail bin Amr, they came to the agreement. وصلَ عبد الرحمن بن معاوية إلى أندلس. He reached Al-Andalus, as we said, in the year 138. So it took him 2 years, to set it up from 136 to 138. When he got into Al-Andalus, started these people, Al-Barbar, Yamaniyin, or before Yamaniyin, Al-Barbar and Al-Umawiyin started coming and supporting him. And they become, يعني, his men. At that moment, he did not have enough people to face Al-Fihri with the number he had and resources. He did not have enough to be able to face Yusuf Al-Fihri. So he started thinking, and his choice was to contact Al-Yamaniyin. Al-Yamaniyin. Al-Yamaniyin, هم يعني the people who migrated originally from Yemen, and they had too much tension between them and Yusuf al-Fihri. So he sat with their leader, Abu al-Sabah al-Yahsubi. He sat with him and they came to a conclusion. Hadoula al-Yamaniyin, their location, remember we said every group took its own city and they started dividing. They were here in Ishbili. Yamaniyin, they were in Ishbili. Yusuf, هذا الفهري, took Qurtuba. Qurtuba as the center, as the capital. Okay? As they did those before. So he was here. Abd al-Rahman ibn Muawiyah came, entered in this area. So he contacted the Yamaniyin, he sat with them, and he convinced them to support him. So now he has al-Barba, he has al-Umawiyin, he has al-Yamaniyin, he has a lot of the indigenous people in the Andalus, and he felt he's strong enough to face Yusuf al-Fihri. He sent a letter to Yusuf al-Fihri. He tells him, surrender. Do it without a fight. I outnumber you or I overpower you now. Just surrender and let's do it peacefully. So obviously Yusuf al-Fihri refused. And he prepared his army and he started marching to fight Abd al-Rahman. So Abd al-Rahman with his people, Umayyin and Barbar and Yamaniyin, made one army. Al-Fihri made his army. And then they met in a big battle. It's a battle called Musara, or Musara. Okay? A big battle in 138, close from Qurtuba. That time, some problems was about to break. Some of the people said, they went to Al-Yahsubi, the head of the Yamaniyin, and they told him, هذا عبد الرحمن ابن معاوية has a very fast horse, فرس شهباء. It's about if he loses, if you guys lose the battle with Yusuf al-Fihri, to get on his horse and run. No one can catch him. And leave you. Okay? So that was about to create division. With that al-Yahsubi, he says, wallahi, ihna al-Yamaniyin, we're not fighting. Khalas, Abd al-Rahman bin Muawiyah would have not been able to fight. So when Abd al-Rahman bin Muawiyah heard about this rumor, he ran to al-Yahsubi. And he told him, listen, I like to throw arrows, archer. And on my horse, it's unstable. Why don't you give me your mule, baghlatak, and I give you my horse? He did not make him feel that he knew, but he wanted to show him that it's a rumor and I will not give up on you. So he gave him the horse and he took his baghle or his mule and he was able to solve the issue. And look how simple he was able to deal with this. So the two armies fought each other, and that will show you the intelligence of this man. And this man is not after the dunya. So the two armies fought, and Yusuf al-Fihri was defeated, and his army big time. Yusuf al-Fihri ran, and then later he got killed. His army, the defeated army, start running away. It was the standard that the victorious army run after the defeated one until they finish them, because those they might go and regroup. So when they wanted to do that, Abd al-Rahman ibn Muawiyah told his army or forbade them from doing so. He said, leave them. And he made a very profound statement. He said, لا تتبعوهم. Don't follow them. اتركوهم. لا تستأصلوا شأفة أعداء ترجون صداقتهم غدا. He said, leave them. Don't follow them. Do not completely finish some enemy that perhaps in the future will be your friends. استبقوهم لأشد عداوة منهم ليوم يكونون فيه معكم. Spare them for an enemy worse than them for a day that you will need them with you against that enemy. And of course he was referring to the القبط, to الصخرة, to the Europeans who are going to be attacking later on. All this happened and he was 25 years old. At this point, he was 25 years old. What this Abd al-Rahman bin Muawiyah did. After the battle was over, Al-Yahsubi, the head of the Yemenis, took the Yemenis aside. And he said, الآن انتصرنا على يوسف يعني يوسف الفهري، وجاء وقت النصر على غيره. ها هو يعرض به عبد الرحمن بن مروان. He said, now we defeated the Fihri. Huh? Inshallah Ali, يعني he did it by himself. And now it's time to defeat the next. What he is implying to defeat, to fight عبد الرحمن بن معاوية. لكن صدق النبي صلى الله عليه وسلم لما قال الحكمة يمانية. Huh? Prophet صلى الله عليه وسلم said, wisdom from the Yemen. The Yemenis refused. They did not agree with them. Usually people, most people, ri'a. غوغائيون. يتبعون كل ناعق. Most people usually follow any caller. You find few callers in the world and each caller got few millions behind. So the point is, those Yemenis refused to obey the Yahsui. Said, we're not going to fight. This man is what we've been looking for. You could have not done it by yourself. You were here before he came. You could not fight Yusuf al-Fihri. You could have not finished him. Now when Allah sent us someone, we're going to get us out of this. Now we're going to fight him. When the person concern is the dunya, and his concern is leadership, and his concern is power, and his concern is wealth, and his concern is authority, he doesn't care. He's thinking of the moment. He cannot think, he cannot have a vision for the future. So they refused to fight with him. Abd al-Rahman bin Muawiyah found out. Found out what this al-Yahsubi said. فَأَسَرَّهَا فِي نَفْسِهِ. He didn't tell him. And he let it go for 11 years before he retired him. 11 years. Sure. How he was able to control his decisions, because he knew, if I do something immediately, still unstable here. I'm not strong yet. So he kept it, and he kept trying to baby him until 11 years later, then he told him, you're fired. So now, هذا عبد الرحمن is in charge of the whole south of Al-Andalus under the power of عبد الرحمن بن معاوية. Now they change, now he got a new laqab. عبد الرحمن بن معاوية after that will be known in history as عبد الرحمن الداخل. عبد الرحمن الداخل. الداخل means the one who enters. And the reason he's named that, because he entered Al-Andalus solo, by himself. And I'm coming to take over, by himself. He came with armies, he came with drones, with tanks, by himself, solo. And Allah Azza wa Jal gave him the tawfiq due to his sincerity. After that, Al-Andalus summiyat Imara. Imara, meaning he declared it separate and independent of Khilaf al-Abbasi. Separate from Khilaf al-Abbasi. And some might say, that means he revolted al-Abbasiyin and he disobeyed them and this and that. Humma, they gave him the reason to do that. Why are you going to kill all these people? Why are he going to trust you? Why you killed his brother, you killed his family, because they were Umayyin. Why are he going to trust you? You could have taken these people. You could have punished the ones who were corrupt. And what's the guilt of those young people? So they created all that, or they gave him reasons to act like that. Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil started organizing Al-Andalus, his region. He had to put down 25 revolutions. 25 revolutions. In his time, he had to put down and kill. And a lot of those revolutions were initiated by Al-Abbasin in Baghdad. They will send their people, their informants, their snitches to create fitna India until everything was settled down for him. He ruled from 138 to 172. Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil, 138 to 172, 34 continuous years. When he died, Al-Andalus was in one of its strongest moments. When he died. This period, and followed with his children and his grandchildren, known as Ahd al-Imara al-Umawi, the era of the Umawi Imara, Emirate. We said it was independent of al-Khilafah al-Abbasiyya. Why he chose al-Andalus? As I said, al-Andalus was very unstable, so it's easy for him to bring something new. There was an ocean between al-Andalus and al-Abbasiyya, so it wasn't easy for them to come after him. And he knew, because he knew al-Abbasiyya, he can't face. And it was too far. In the land of Islam, it was too far from al-Abbasiyya. What did al-Abbasiyya do during this time when he took over? As I said, they started initiating some revolutions and some riots against him. In 146, in 146, that means 8 years after he took over, al-Mansur, Abu Ja'far, Khalifa al-Abbasi, sent a man with the name of Al-Ala Al-Hadram, Ibn Mughith Al-Hadram. He sent him there to kill Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil in year 148. He sent him there, and he had communication with people who were going to fight with him. Because remember, those Al-Fihriyin who were in charge, and some people didn't like that. You're going to find all those Al-Fulul everywhere, You're always going to find those people who don't like the new leader. So they're waiting for an opportunity, So he came, Hada Ibn Mughith, Al-Ala Ibn Mughith Al-Hadrami, and he got people around him, and he, of course, by the support of Al-Abbasiyyin, and he fought with Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil, but Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil killed him, and complete humiliation. قال أبو جعفر المنصور قتلنا هذا البائس بتكليفه بحرف عبد الرحمن. He said, this البائس, this loser, that they sent al-Khalif al-Abbas, Abu Ja'far. Abu Ja'far, when they used to ask about him, what you think of him? He was mighty. He was very tough. They will say, Abu Ja'far, Abu Ja'far. What you want me to tell you about Abu Ja'far? Abu Ja'far, Abu Ja'far. There's nothing you can describe. So he said, this loser we sent killed us. By trying to fight with Abd al-Rahman. Then he said, مَا لَنَا فِي هَذَا الْفَتَى مِنْ مَطْمَحٍ. If Abu Ja'far al-Mansur said, there is no way we can get to this young man, referring to Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil, وَلَيْسَ لَنَا أَمَلٌ فِي حَرْبِ. There is no way we can defeat him. And al-Abbasiyyin did not mess with him ever. After that, they did not mess with him. Not even once. One day Abu Ja'far al-Mansur hada Khalifa with al-Abbasiyyin. Hum al-Abbasiyyin, nasl Abdullah bin Abbas, Qurashiyyin too. So he was sitting with the Abbasiyyin, and he asked him, من هو صقر قريش? Who is صقر قريش? The eagle of Quraysh. They started counting names until they said Muawiyah. Muawiyah ibn Sufyan, Sahabi radiallahu anhu. They said Abd al-Malik bin Marwan. He said no. He said Saqr Quraysh, Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil. Said the eagle of Quraysh is Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil. Qala dakhal al-Andalus munfaridan bi nafsi. He entered al-Andalus solo. Muayyadan bi ra'yi. Convinced of his opinion, his vision. Mustashiban li azmi. In a company, with his ambition. يعبر القفر ويركب البحر, passing the land and invading the sea. دخل بلدا أعجميا, entered the country. He did not speak their language. فجمع الأنصار, he compiled around him the supporters. وجند الأجناد, and created the armies. وأقام ملكا, and established a kingdom. بحسن تدبيره وشدة عزمه. with his good thinking and strong ambition. هذا صقر قريش. So, يعني as I said, why someone might say, why would he fight al-Abbasiyin? And Abbasiyin were the Khilafah, Khilafah of Islam is important. They gave him the reason, as I said. They gave him the reason to do that. Look at the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wasallam. After he was tortured and fought by Quraysh, and they killed his uncle, and they killed his companions and all that. When he was chased out, kicked out of Mecca. After he came back, in Fath Mecca, قَالَ اذْهَبُوا فَأَنْتُمُ الطُّلَقَى. He forgave all of it. He said, go. You know, blemish on you today. Feel free. فَلَمَّا مَاتَ النَّبِيِّ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَسَلَّمُ. The whole peninsula was Muslim when he died. When he died, they all left Islam. And they read it. Except four places. For all the peninsula, everyone left Islam. Except four places. Medina, Mecca, Taif, and a small village called Hajar. But Mecca was just new in Islam, 2 years. Just 2 years in Islam. Perhaps the way he treated them kept them innocent. How he forgave. But imagine the Prophet start hanging them, killing them. They would have most probably done the same. But after that, al-Abbasiyin, al-Khilaf al-Abbasiyin changed its attitude. And they created a dynasty that served Islam and Muslimin and spread Islam all over. Okay. So what did Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil, what did he do in al-Andalus when he took over? A lot of people, they have power now, all they do is put more soldiers around them, more bodyguards. So they can keep their position. Let's see what he did. He actually built a very strong army. Jaysh al-Umawi, very strong. He depended on al-Mualladin. Remember we said al-Mualladin, those are the Muhajjaneen. Those who, the father is an Arab, migrant from outside, the mother is Barbar, or the indigenous people. So these new babies they gave, or newborns, have loyalty to both. Okay? So he focused on those, the indigenous, if we say the people who were born there. تمد على الفصائل والقبائل. He shared with everyone. He took advantage of every group. He did not separate a group from another. He did not give preference to a group over the other. He used the Amoyin, the Barbar, the Yamaniyin, the Arab, everyone. Saqaliba, he bought them. Saqaliba, or they call them Slavs. Silaf. Silaf. Some translation, Slavs, like slaves. What happened in Europe? There were wars going on. These wars leave children orphans. Because it was one of the habits for the soldiers when they go fight, they take their families with them. And beside that, the armies will conquer cities. So they will come conquer a city, kill every man, every adult. What's left? The women and the children. Those children were turned into slaves and bought by the Jews. The Jews, that was their business. Then those Jews will take them to, there was a special city in France. This city called Verdun. In it, there were factories. For what? For what? For wine? You get them drunk, Okay? No. They were fake factories for castration. Arabic castration, هذا one خليفة sent to one governor a letter he told him, احصي من عندك من العبيد. احصي يعني عد. But the dot looked like there was a dot on the ha. فراح قرأها احصي من عندك من ها. وراح خاص كل العبيد. احصي means count. So count how many slaves you got in your area. The difference between احصي and احصي is a dot on the ha. احصي means castrate. So when he castrated all this. So castration was, like they do to dogs and cats. Neuter them. Or spay them. Okay? So castration was to remove that for the males. To remove their testicles. So he will lose shahr. He will lose his desires. So whatever they use him for, he's ready. So عبد الرحمن الداخل, those were sold in Europe. So عبد الرحمن الداخل, وهذا نفس الشيء, as we will see if we talk about المماليك. المماليك was the same thing. قطز, these people. So he used to buy them and then raise them on علم, knowledge, jihad, fighting, until his army, they will be making the majority of his armies. His army reached 100,000 people. Had an army, 100,000 people, today is a big army. So imagine, then, you're talking about 1300 or 1200 years back. اهتم بالجانب الديني والعلمي. He took care of the education. He took care of spreading knowledge. He took care of spreading the knowledge of Islam. He took care of الأمر بالمعروف والنهي عن المنكر. He took care of القضاء. Legal system. He established a legal system. Because this is important. You want a stable land, you have to spread justice in it. If people are oppressed, you can never rest. You can never rest as a leader. As long as the people under you are oppressed and treated unjustly, you can never feel safe. Very important. This is a law from the laws of Allah. One of the Romans, ambassador, came to Medina to talk to Umar bin Khattab. سأل وين عمر وين where is عمر خليفة أمير المؤمنين. They said in the masjid. He went to the masjid. He found عمر بن الخطاب laying down sleeping in the masjid. No guards, no armies, no حاجب, no doors, no فوقف عند رأسي وقال حكمت فعدلت فأمنت فنمت. You ruled, you were fair, you were safe, you slept. Don't be fooled by seeing an oppressor or a tyrant and believing that he's happy or safe. He has many guards around him, but though even those guards, what will protect him from them? And how many in the history his own guard will kill? Imagine, will sell him out. So he spread that قضاء والحسبة والأمر بالمعروف والنهي عن المنكر, and that spread justice. بنى مسجد قرطبة العظيم. He built the masjid of قرطبة. 80,000 دينار, golden dinar. مسجد قرطبة finished. It took 8 أمراء to finish. He started it, and then it finished by the 8th Amir or leader after him. He took care a lot of architecture. Okay? He built a lot of fortresses, a lot of castles for defense. He connected roads between one side of Al-Andalus to the other side. He built the first money factory, the coins factory in Al-Andalus. Now Islamic money. That is special for that place. أنشأ الرصافة. رصافة, he built a رصافة. رصافة are gardens, fruits, and plants, and vegetables. he will import them from all over the world. These fruits that don't grow there, he will import them from all over the world. Whatever grows in that environment, he will keep it, and then it will spread in lenders. Concerned about his people. He understood the danger of the Christians in the north and in the east, from France and Lyon. Because we said the Sahara, now there's a kingdom, the kingdom of Lyon. So he established three armies. Okay? One army will hold this area. So it will protect from France. That will be northeast. And that is here. Zaragoza, Sarqast. And then he created an army and he put it right here. He put it right here. And then he created a third army and he put it right here. Okay? So this way he protects, because now we have the kingdom of Lyon. Then you have the French. Okay? So he had to prevent them from having access to Qurtuban, to the south of Elanders. He had a very unique habit, and he learned it from his ancestors, from Lumawiyin. And that is to fight, to clear the jihad, to go jihad trips once in the winter and once in the summer. And what they call today preemptive strike. Preemptive. You will go until you stay quiet, they're gonna come to you. You say, this guy is not strong enough. But every year you do it a couple of times, you go scare them a little bit and come back. خلاص. Some people, that's the only language they understand. That is the ummah has been in honor as long as they did that. This is what they do today. Well, some countries, they want to show their muscles and they go bomb here and bomb there. What they want to do? They're going to show we're in power. We're strong. As part of it, yani, in addition to that. So he was following these called the sawaif. Sawaif, battles in the winter and battle or trip in the summer for al-hujum, ijhal, preemptive. He used to divide the budget into three parts. Three thirds. One third will be for the army. One third for the army. Then they used to fund the armies to defend the land. Today, they fund the armies to defend them. So you find the country today, the Muslim world, is attacked by the enemies. They're bombing them, or they're striking them, or they're killing some people on the borders, and the army sleep. Look at Pakistan. How many Pakistani soldiers got killed on the borders? What did they do? But when someone says this government is wrong, what happens? The army is knocking his door. The armies are supposed to be established to protect the people. And this phenomena is coming home. Alright. So one third will go toward the army to make it stronger, to defend the land. Another third, for the expenses of the country. Salaries, building, architecture, streets. Actually, one of the things that I did not mention, that's his grandson will build. So, salaries and buildings and facilities and streets and all that. One third, and one third will be saved. So they won't be in debt. How you control countries? Put them in debt. How the country get humiliated and tortured, and disrespected, and cannot even speak? Because they're in debt. Because they gave your country $8 billion, loan. And somehow, six of those ended up in your saving account, right? In Swiss. So you cannot talk. That's exactly what they do. whenever they see some alternative happening in some country, they're going to create a havoc and fitna and a mess in that country. This is in the world. In Tunisia, the phenomena of Islamic banking started coming to the surface. Look what happened in Tunisia. Don't think all this happening for no reason. The Rothschild, or Rothschild is what they call, right? They will not allow this to happen. Keep the country in debt, they'll do whatever you want, including America. Honestly, America, I feel bad for it. We live here, our country, but it's part of the whole equation. America isn't independent. America is like every other country, controlled by those who loan money. Don't think this Obama and the administration or over in the White House or the Congress or Washington or Capitol make decisions. You're wrong. The people who lend the money are the ones who make decisions. Those people execute them. One of the things, which is the Reserve Bank. Supposedly, the Reserve Bank, is the bank of the country. Bank in Merkezia. The Reserve Bank in America is a private bank. How many Americans know that? Private bank, owned by private people. They have the power to print money. They made sure these people, money makers, throughout the years, they made sure that they have the power of printing money. Whenever a president came in America, whenever, go read American history, whenever you see, of course, most probably you won't find these things in those books of history, because guess who printed them? Whenever you find an American president getting assassinated, most probably, he did something to take that power of printing money from the hands of those people. They killed him. Imagine. Very important. That's how the world functions today. That's why they will, tell you one, to Sharia, we don't care. But once the problem they have with Sharia, they don't care. You think they care about you ruling by Sharia and stoning the adulterer to death or cutting the hands of the thief? You think they care? Muhammad, they're killing them without any crime. But they don't care about them. They care about their own self-interest. Their interest is, they know the only system in the world exists today that will, become independent of their system and their control is Islamic system. Because Islamic system is a complete system that really depends on real money. I had the papers in our pocket, you think it's money? It's papers. Mean nothing. You can wake up tomorrow and your dollar, is nothing. But when the money was gold and silver, who cares? They cannot control it. It's gold and silver. The coins, when we said he built the first factory of to make money. But they didn't make print papers. This is ink on papers. Their money was dinar and dirham. Dinar made out of gold. Dirham, 10. Dirham, 1 dinar is 10 dirham. And dirham made out of silver. That's the money. And actually, for your information, some states in America today use gold and silver coins as a currency. In Utah, the last one I read about was Utah. You can have coins of gold and silver to go to shopping. Because that's the only way. And Mahumma, they're having printers somewhere and they print. Just like Uday, Uday Qusay, the children of Saddam Hussein, what they did after the invasion, they started printing money. They issued an order that the original Iraqi money is null, useless. And now there's a new currency. They start printing. They will print millions of dinar Iraqiya. The 1 dinar Iraqi used to be $4 and $5, $6, I think. After the invasion, now you can, with few $100s, get millions of dinar Iraqi. Millions. Now the salary, I talk with some shuyukh in Imam Masajid in Iraq, his salary, $1 million, $2 million a month. He said, yalla yalla, enough to pay rent and feed the children. Okay? I think $1,000 is $1 million, I think, if I'm not mistaken. Okay? Or 500. Anyway, the point is, they start printing, and going buying what? Gold. Print, buy gold. Not the food, أسواق من الدهر. وسيعلم الذين ظلموا أي منقلب ينقلبون. So the point is, it's a big monopoly and a big game. We must be, as Muslims, aware of all these things. So he started doing that. He knew, understood that a country in debt does not have full power. So he would save 1/3 of the budget, for, as they say, خَبِّرْ شَكْ لَبْيَلْ لِيَوْمَكِ الْأَسْوَى. For the dark days, for al-masail, anything could happen. Disaster, famine, no rain. We need money. We need to buy food for the people. Water runs out. Okay? A plague, طَعُون. We need to treat people. بِنَا مَصَانَ لِلسِّلَحِ. He started building factories to produce weapons. As long as a country imports its weapons, it can never be independent. The French and the British, they colonized our countries and they left. But they still sell us their weapons. We actually have to buy, for us to move from one place to another, we need to buy cars from them. How hard to make a car, man? Cheers. So he started building weapons factories. So he builds manjaniq, factories for manjaniq. Factories, manjaniq, ish, caterpillar, whatever. They built factories for swords. All that. Mainly in Tulaytana and Purdu. He also focused on building the marine fleet. The marine fleet. Walak shofi. افتح الباب. The marine fleet. أساطيل بحرية. إحنا, if we're here, this is easy to be attacked. This is easy. This is متوسط. This is the Atlantic here. So it's very easy to be attacked. If we don't have marines, surrounding and protecting us in the water. So he built some ports, and he built marine fleets. He built one in Barcelona, a port in Barcelona. He built a port in Marcia here, Marcia. He built a port in Almeria, and he built a port somewhere here. Where? Tartusha. It's up there, right? Come on. Anyway, he took care of that. Now something gonna happen where he will have to build something here too. Okay, so he took care of this. Because this is that tent. Why are we gonna, and this is where protected, but you will see that some people started coming around. So he had to build, take care of that area as well. قال أبو حيان الأندلسي. أبو حيان الأندلسي historian, and he described عبد الرحمن الداخل. قال راجح العقل, very balanced in his intellect. راسخ الحلم, very forbearing. واسع العلم, too much knowledge. ثاقب الفهم, very sharp in understanding. كثير الحزم, very serious. نافذ العزم, his plans will go through. بريئا من العجز, free from any shortcomings. سريع النهضة, quick to react. متصل الحركة, very active. لا يخلد إلى راحة, does not rest. ولا يسكن إلى دعاء, does not get lazy. بعيد الغور, he looks deep in things. شديد الحدة, very sharp. قليل الطمأنينة, does not relax so much. بليغا مفهوما, very eloquent, very understandable. شاعرا محسنا, very good poet. سمحا سخيا, very kind, very generous. طلق اللسان, very eloquent. وكان قد أعطي هيبة من وليه وعدوه. His enemies and his friends will be scared of him. وكان يحضر الجنائز ويصلي عليها. He used to witness the funerals himself and pray on it himself. ويصلي بالناس إذا كان حاضرا الجمعة والأعياد. He would lead جمعة and عيد. ويخطب على المنبر, give خطبه عند المنبر. ويعود المرضى, visit the sick. مثال رائع للقائد المسلم, great example for a Muslim leader. فإنه مع رجاحة عقله وسعة علمه, in addition to too much knowledge and too much forbearing, كان لا ينفرد برأي. Very intelligent, but he will not make his own decisions. He say, I'm all that, so I make my plan. He used to use the shura. كان لا ينفرد برأيه, فإذا اجتمعت الشورى على رأي كان نافذ العزم في تطبيقه رحمه الله. When the shura, him and the shura agree on something, that's what the decision he will make. دخل عليه أحد الجنود, one of the incidents to know more about him, دخل عليه أحد الجنود. One time they had a battle and they were victorious. Okay? So one of the soldiers came to him. So this soldier, for some reason he had personal issues or whatever, he raised his voice. يعني raised his voice in the presence of, who was talking to عبد الرحمن الداخل. So he raised his voice at him. فقال له, يا هذا إني أعلمك من جهل. He addressed him, he said, you, let me teach you something, it seems you're ignorant of. إنه يشفع لك في هذا الموقف هذا النصر الذي نحن فيه. The only reason I will let you go is because of this victory we just made. يعني the atmosphere is good, let's not mess it up. Maybe the soldier was young and excited. عليك بالسكينة والوقار. He continued to advise him. Be tranquil, be in peace. فإني أخاف أن تسيء الأدب في يوم ليس فيه نصر فأغضب عليك. Be cool, be stable, be peaceful, talk normal. Because I'm afraid that you will speak loud one day when there is no victory. So I will get really angry. Give him a chance. فإذا بالجندي يرد علي بمنتهى الذكاء. The soldier answers back to him. Very intelligent answer. فقال أيها الأمير عسى الله أن يجعل عند كل زلة لي نصرا لك فتغفر لي. He tells him, يا أيها الأمير, الأمير, the leader, may Allah, every time I make a mistake in front of you, Allah give you a victory, so you forgive me. So he admired his answer so much. فقربه. He brought him closer to him. He took care of him. He said, this person, got something special. So he brought him closer and he took advantage of him and he used him wherever he needed him. فقال الأمير هذا ليس اعتذار جاهل. This is not the pardon of an ignorant person. فقربه إليه ورفع من شأنه. عبد الرحمن هذا الداخل رحمه الله continued to test his children. As we will see later on, خلاص. The older son takes over. And we saw that already. But he started testing his children. Who gonna be the best ones to take over? He had a younger child and an older child. An older Sulaiman and the younger Hisham. At the end, he chose the youngest. He chose Hisham. He chose Hisham to take over him. So هذا عبد الرحمن الداخل رحمه الله قصر صقر قريش. He continued to rule Andalus from 138 to 172. 34 years. 138 to 172. And that was the establishment of the era of the Umayyad Emirates. And then he will die, and his son in 172, and his son will take over Hisham bin Abd al-Rahman al-Dakhil, and that is where we continue next time.